Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. The case before you, I will put to you as requiring one significant decision. And that is, can a bank or lender foreclose on a deed of trust on a promissory note that had been extinguished or barred by operation of law? Can they proceed to foreclose as they did in this case in a 120 proceeding on the deed of trust when everyone concedes that the signer of the promissory note, Mrs. Kopenhauer, had died more than a year prior to their filing their notice of election and demand? And the statute in Colorado, under what we call 1512-803, which is the variously called a non-claim statute or the probate statute on filing claims, says that you must file a claim within 1 year of the date of death of the person from whom you are seeking to recover for any claim that you have against that person.
Doesn't the Ballapied case resolve that issue?
So which case?
The Ballapied case, Ballapied versus Robinson. Says a creditor has three choices. He can proceed against the estate, in which case that may be barred, but he may also foreclose his...
Yes, and I think that that case means that that has to have a valid promissory note where you can't recover on anything. If you look at the...
Well, doesn't that apply in the face of the holding? Which says that the non-claim statute doesn't apply if you're just foreclosing your security interests.
Well, then, look, maybe we should examine it more. Thanks for the question in that regard. Because we have a Colorado case also, except with more than one, that says that if the debt has been extinguished, you cannot recover anything on the deed of trust or mortgage.
Extinguished by the non-claim statute?
Well, the statute we're talking about, 1512-803, is talked about as a non-claim statute.
I understand that. But you cannot foreclose under the non-claim statute?
You can foreclose.
You didn't file a claim in the estate timely?
Oh, you can if the asset that you're seeking to foreclose on is in the estate. That's under Section 3, particularly under Section 3 of that statute.
But here the husband signed the deed of trust himself.
You bet. You bet he did sign the deed of trust.
Doesn't that create a security interest in the lender that can be foreclosed?
Well, Colorado
does. Assuming that the wife's signature on the deed of trust is no longer applicable.
Though the Colorado law, I don't believe, says that deed of trust creates security interest. It is a right to foreclose on a lien that you have is not a property right. And security interest would you give you a property right in that, if that's the way you seek to proceed. But it seems to be pretty basic law. If you don't have a promissory note that's enforceable, you cannot foreclose on the deed of trust. And we cited some cases to that effect in here. The way that you can foreclose, I think that maybe you're referring to, is that under the statute 803, subsection 3, if the asset you're seeking to foreclose on is in the estate, you can foreclose on whether you file a claim or not.
Counsel, if they had proceeded within the 1 year, could they have foreclosed on the deed of trust even though it passed in joint tenancy by virtue of the husband signing the deed of trust?
The way the law is that they then have a claim in the estate, a general claim in the estate, because as you know, that property passes outside of the estate, so it doesn't pass through the estate. But you have a general claim against the estate for the amount of whatever you notice.
And at that point, because the husband signed the deed of trust, they could have foreclosed.
You bet.
Okay.
You bet. Now.
So let me make sure I understand. So if the estate was deficient, if the estate could not honor the promissory note, then the deed of trust would remain as against the husband's interest.
And I'm saying that if they have filed within 1 year,
right,
under 1512-803, yes, I don't think any question about that.
Now, as I read the, I think it's the case you cite, the Park State case, essentially it says that the lien against the extinguished, let me start again, joint tenancy, one of the tenants passes, and that interest is extinguished by the passive. And as I read the case, it says that you no longer have a claim against that extinguished interest.
That's correct.
But don't you still have a claim against the property?
You do. You do, and if they file, pardon me for pointing, but if you file a claim, then you have a general claim in the estate, and you can go against any of the property in the estate.
But the property.
Now, that property is not in the estate, so it would be whatever property there is in the estate.
And are you saying the husband takes it free of the deed of trust? I mean, there's a deed of trust initially against his interest as well as wife's. It's a deed of trust on the property, and he takes it free of the deed of trust?
No, here's what I'm saying. If they had done this right, there wouldn't have been any question.
Sure.
They made several common sense mistakes that they didn't do right, and I think trying to hold us to the responsibility of their mistakes. But if they had filed a claim against the wife, then, and they had gotten a judgment, or were in the process of getting a judgment, so it was a valid claim in that sense, then the deed of trust could have been used as a method of paying that off, because as you saw in there, he also pledged his share of the property, and she pledged her share of the property in this. Now, this is a quirk of estate planning. You people probably know this better than I do, that that's one of the men means of keeping property from going through an estate is to do it in joint tenancy in that regard. So it could have been very easily prevented by the bank by just making both parties sign the note, then it wouldn't have been an issue at all. It would have been enforceable if he had signed the note as well as the wife.
The deed of trust refers to both parties as borrowers. Do you think there may have been some mistake that they were both on the note?
Yeah, I read it carefully because I saw that same thing that you did. And what it does down there say, then if both parties are not borrowers, then here's what the ramifications are. And it's pretty clear that this is just a standard form. It looks like, you know, that's in there all the time and somebody just didn't cross it out there. So I don't think there's any question. Nobody had even asserted that he had signed the promissory note in this case. So, go ahead, sir.
I'm sorry, finish your sentence.
Well, I was just going to say that, so from that standpoint, he doesn't have any liability on the principal asset of the promissory note, because he never did sign that. So.
Help me here, though, and the if I'm understanding your argument, the wife's title, right, and interest is extinguished outside of the estate because it's the passing of a joint tenant, whereupon the entire ownership vests in husband. Had they gone into the estate, had the creditor gone into the estate in a timely fashion and made their claim in a probate court,
mm-hmm,
and the probate court says, you know, it's a valid claim, but we have no assets. Then in your view, they could have foreclosed on husband's title.
You bet. That's my opinion.
And, but here they can't foreclose on husband's title, not so much because it passed outside of the estate, but you're saying because they did not make a probate claim.
Well, that's correct. And keep in mind that this is a non-claim statute, which means it cannot be extended or reopened or anything like that. Frankly, it's been called two or three things. The judge called it a statute of repose, and the statute itself called it, in a very strange language, is not barred by other statutes of limitation. This is that section would seem to indicate that the writers thought this was a statute of limitation. And as you saw, we cited several statute of limitations cases in here because, frankly, I don't know which way it really went. If it got to the final determination.
Well, I think it expressly says it's a non-claim statute and not a statute of limitations.
Well,
I think the statute itself says
that. Yeah, well, except the statute I'm reading right from. If not barred earlier by other statutes of limitation. So I can't honestly tell you what it is, except everybody seems to agree it's a non-claim statute. And it cannot be extended. It cannot be used on beyond the date of the 1 year period of time. I think I may have just a few minutes left to ask.
You may. Reserve the remainder of your time. Thank you, Mr. Braga. Ms. Williams.
Before I start, I'll just apologize. I'm sneezing my way through. Allergies are getting the best of me today. May it please the court, Marie Williams, Faber Daniels, registration number 32273, on behalf of the appellees. What Mr. Cottonmore is asking the court to decide or declare is that the non-claim statute and the passing of 1 year in which Deutsche Bank did nothing to pursue the note against his deceased wife served to extinguish the deed of trust that he signed to that encumbered his own property interest. There's no law, no precedent that would lead us to think that that was the correct conclusion. Mr. Cottonmore signed a deed of trust that granted a security interest in his property interest. It secured the payment of the note on the property, and the note went unpaid after his wife's death.
Isn't the deed of trust merely incident to the note? And so if the note is unenforceable, how can you collect on the deed of trust?
Well, it's not just incident. There are two separate contracts. And the case of, I believe it's Folda case that was cited in some of the briefs, talks about the fact that the contracts, the note and the deed of trust, create different obligations, whereas the note creates an obligation to pay, one that the husband here didn't undertake, only the wife did. The deed of trust creates a separate contractual right to foreclose upon security for the note in order to recover the value of the property. And here, Mr. Cottonmore specifically signed and agreed that he was also encumbering his property interest in the property by virtue of doing that.
Right, and that's why I think if they had gone within the 1 year and they had a valid claim against the note, they could have gotten the collateral because he signed away his rights to it as collateral. But I'm not sure if that means if you can't collect on the note that you get to somehow collect the collateral.
Well, I think that the fact that these two contracts create separate obligations is borne out by the language of the statute 38-39-207. If they truly ran together and you could only collect on the collateral under the deed of trust when you still had a valid note, then there wouldn't be a need for the language of that statute, excuse me, which says that you can't collect on or you can't pursue the deed of trust once the note is unenforceable by virtue of statute of limitations. That statute wouldn't be necessary if they always ran together. But
which statute is that?
38-39-207. And what it says is the lien created by any instrument shall be extinguished, regardless of any other provision in this article to the contrary, at the same time with the right to commence suit to enforce payment of the indebtedness or performance of the obligation secured by the lien is barred by any statute of limitation in the state.
Well, doesn't that just mean if you can't enforce the note, you can't collect on the deed of trust?
It only means that if it's the statute of limitations that creates the unenforceability of the note. And that becomes a key distinction in this case, the distinction between a statute of limitations and a non-claim statute. And it is the case that the non-claim statute says in its plain language that it's not a statute of limitations.
Well, the statute of limitations would apply to any time that you're trying to foreclose. But here you have a special situation, which is a probate, and there's a separate interest in getting a probate finalized fairly quickly. And so I'm not sure that you can say that just because they provide a general statute of limitations that would cover any claim, that somehow, you know, leads to the probate non-claim statute somehow not taking effect in this situation.
Well, I think that there's a case from this court that says that 38-39-27, or its predecessor, doesn't extend to non-claim statutes. It's the Willits case that started into the briefing, which says this provision does not apply to the non-claim statutes, and the non-claim statutes specifically preserve the right of a secured creditor to pursue its security. And so I do think it makes a difference. The other thing to keep in mind here is that, you know, we agree that the property no longer belongs to the estate. It did pass by operation of joint tenancy to the husband upon the wife's death. And so what we're foreclosing upon is the deed of trust on his property interest in the property. It has,
but he didn't have a loan.
He didn't have a loan, but he provided security for the loan.
But if the loan can't be collected, then what difference does it make if he provided security?
Let me grab something on the table.
Sure.
I would direct you to page 79 of the record. It's a paragraph 13 of the deed of trust, which explains what Mr. Conroy was doing by signing the deed of trust and not the note. You pointed out that on the deed of trust, both husband and wife are borrowers, but on the note, only the wife is the borrower. And the contract actually speaks to what happens in that situation. And what it says, if any borrower who co-signs this security instrument but does not execute the note is co-signing this security instrument only to mortgage, grant, and convey the co-signer's interest in the property under the terms of the security instrument. It goes on to say he's not personally obligated to pay the sums secured by the security instrument. So although he wasn't a signer of the note, here he's pledging his interest, his property interest that he has by virtue of the fact that the property was held in joint tenancy as security for his wife's payment of the note.
If the note is default, if there's a default on the note.
Correct.
There's no excuse to that, is there?
There is not.
Now, assume this seems to bring together the non-claim statute and the estate problem together with the joint tenancy problem. Under a hypothetical where it's not husband and wife joint tenancy, but child wishes to borrow money and can't do so without some co-signing or backing, so father grants the lender a deed of trust on his property to secure the daughter's loan, okay? And then the daughter passes away, and no estate is open, no notice is given, and no claim is filed within the 1 year. Is the lender unable to foreclose on the father's property to recover the amount of the loan?
I guess I'm unclear about what, I think it would depend on for what purpose the daughter had borrowed money.
Why does it make a difference for the purpose?
Okay, I think that if the father pledged collateral for purposes of the daughter borrowing money for any reason, yes, that if the 1 year passes, the non-claim statute bars an action on the note, the loan, that the lender was
against the estate.
Against the estate.
But doesn't affect the obligation of the father, does it?
That's right, it does not.
How is that different from here?
It's not different from here.
Thank you.
And I think Your Honor pointed out that, you know, this particular case does present somewhat of an issue of first impression and how all of these statutes fit together and apply to particular facts here. But we have these well-established principles of Colorado law that get us to the result that the trial court reached and that we urge here.
Well, wouldn't the bank not have a problem if they had just required two co-signers on the note if the property is held in joint tenancy?
That's right. They wouldn't have a problem then.
They just made a bad loan. They used collateral that was uncertain.
Well,
it passed in joint tenancy and they didn't proceed in a year.
There may be many reasons why a bank would make only one spouse of the borrower on the note and have both of them sign the deed of trust. I don't know the particular reason what's here, but sometimes it can be the credit scores, the credit ratings of the husband and wife. It may be that considering both of their credit together, they couldn't have qualified for the loan. And I'm not saying that was the case here, but there are many circumstances where the bank and lender might make a decision to loan money only to one spouse, but still by having both of them sign a deed of trust actually provides themselves with more security and doesn't in fact make a defective note. They make a better deed of trust by doing it that way.
Ms. Williams, if, was this estate ever submitted to probate?
It was not.
Was there any notice given to Deutsche Bank that upon the death does the fact that it wasn't submitted to probate make a difference?
I don't think it makes a difference. And there was notice given to the bank, okay, at least through phone calls from the husband.
Okay, thank you.
So what happens after the wife's death is that with respect to her obligation under the note, Deutsche Bank still had a right to collect on the note for up to a year. It still had a valid deed of trust signed by the husband on the property. It didn't file an action to collect on the note within a year, and as we stand here, it has no right to proceed on the note itself. The appellant would have you stop there and say that he gets the property free and clear. As we talked about, we believe that's not the end of the story. Because the deed of trust continues to encumber the property, and 38-39-207 does not extend to non-claim statutes. In other words, it doesn't tie the deed of trust to the note in a situation where it's a non-claim statute rather than a statute of limitations that bars a claim on the note. We're in a situation where Deutsche Bank still had the right to foreclose on the deed of trust that the husband had signed and properly did so.
Ms. Williams, would it be a reasonable extension from your argument that if somehow the note was determined to be void, so let's say that a claim was made on it, but it was determined to be void, under your argument, it would seem that you could still foreclose?
I don't think that I would go that far, because there is language in the security instrument, or in the deed of trust, that speaks to it being a security instrument for purposes of securing the payment of the note. And so if the note were void, I think there would be an argument that that voids the deed of trust as well.
But here you're saying if there's a non-claim, you can no longer claim for recovery on the note, which is essentially the same as what would happen if it was void.
Well, except that it's by operation of statute and not because...
Okay, so by operation of statute, you can no longer make a claim to recover the money due.
Correct.
And...
A claim against the estate.
A claim against the estate for the money due. And there's nobody else you can make that claim against. Correct. Essentially, the promissory note's no longer enforceable.
Correct.
And yet your argument would be, even though it's no longer enforceable because there was a default, you could simply allege the default in the foreclosure action.
That's right, because there's still a valid deed of trust signed by the husband that encumbers his interest in the property as distinct from the wife's interest in the property. And that comes back to the operation of what happens upon death on property held in joint tenancy. It only extinguishes liens placed on the property by the deceased spouse and not all liens on the property, only the portions that the wife put on the property.
Thank you.
Would the same result pertain if the husband did not sign the deed of trust?
It would not. I think that the fact that the husband signed the deed of trust here is the distinction. If only the wife had signed the deed of trust and the note, then upon joint tenancy, her lien would have been extinguished, and had the bank not filed an action within a year to collect on the note against the estate, it would be out of luck. If there are no further questions, I will wrap up and simply ask that the court affirm the trial court's granting of our Rule 12b-5 motion.
Thank you, Ms. Williams.
Thank you.
Mr. Bridge. Go ahead, Ryan.
Let me ask you the same question I asked opposing counsel. If the father grants a deed of trust to secure his daughter's loan, daughter dies, and no claim is filed against her estate, is the deed of trust no longer enforceable?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it is not, and here's why. Because the note, if you don't sue on the note in a year, I'm assuming that is in your question, the daughter...
Didn't file a claim in the estate.
No, but the daughter is the one who had signed the promissory note, correct?
Correct.
All right, then if you look at the cases that we have cited to you in here, and that particularly I'll direct your attention to this McGovney case, which is a case which talks about this exact aspect of this, and it talks about the promissory note being the principal and the deed of trust being incidental to the principal. That it says, and the case is still good law in Colorado, as far as I can tell, that if, and this is my term using what he said, if the statute is a bar to the principal, it should also be a bar to the incidental, that's the deed of trust. So if you cannot collect on the note, you cannot go forward on the deed of trust. And they cited a case called FOPA in here, and FOPA in its language, not part of its opinion, also ends up saying basically the same thing. If the principal, which you're talking about as the note, is unenforceable, then the incidental, which is the deed of trust.
If it's unenforceable because of statute of limitations or unenforceable because of an armed claim statute?
No, the case doesn't deal with whether it's in a non-claim statute McGovern. It just says under general, I don't know what kind of law that would be, corporate law or real estate law or whatever law that would be. If you lose the right to collect on the note, you lose the right to collect on the deed of trust. And that's what the governor says, and that's also what I dictated that the FOPA case is. And I think the case you mentioned to me a minute ago, in the case we never could find the statute that it refers to in there, so I couldn't find much about that case at all, because we could never locate the statute that it referred to in there. So what we think you should do in this case, we think that you should reverse the action of the trial court when it dismissed the case for failure to state a claim. We think you should reinstate the case in the district court as a minimum. We also think that you are in a position now, because you're on a de novo basis of this appeal, that you should find that the promissory note has, in fact, terminated any claim on the deed of trust as a result of the statute 1512-803 in this case.
And quiet title in your client?
And quiet title in our client. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This case will probably never come up again, but it's here with us here, and I think this is the way it should stand. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Braga. Ms. Williams, this case now stands submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course.